David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management and joins us every month with astute financial advice and political insights. And today's topic, I love this, the politics of kindness. David Murata, welcome back to The Shilling Show and a great topic that you selected
for
us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay. So let's start out by just looking at this and taking an overview of the politics of kindness, because we're coming up on the end of an administration and we're hearing the complaints not only from political watchers but from people in the media and Hollywood people that we're going to be facing an era of cruelness and greediness in Donald Trump.
Yeah, you'd think that we were going to line up everyone and take all their wealth and shoot them in the streets.
Yes.
All conservatives and libertarians are painfully aware that liberal activists and publicists have successfully weaponized compassion and kindness. Mm-hmm. And it's important for both conservatives and liberals to understand this debate, because it's one of the things that not only separates us as a country in the way that we view things, but also just makes this the debate mean-spirited, because liberals cannot concede that anyone else has good intentions. They think that they're the owners of good intentions. And Garrison Keillor, who's beautifully eloquent on a number of things, expressed it best when he said, "I am a liberal, and liberalism is the politics of kindness." And that's the way that they view it. This is the way that decent people should be. This is the way that people who care should be. And if you're not like us, you don't care. You have no good intentions. You're just mean-spirited and you're evil. And in defense of sort of, I think the first thing to understand is that this is the way that liberals view themselves, and it is the way that liberals view conservatives. If they were to concede that Donald Trump had good intentions, mm-hmm. They would lose most of their argument. They have to think that he's mean-spirited and he's bigoted. They have to think that all conservatives are mean-spirited and bigoted. And when they find something that's going wrong, it's the rule, not the exception to them. So even President Obama, who's now on his way out, said, "Kindness covers all my political beliefs. When I think about what I'm fighting for, what gets me up every single day, that captures it just about as much as anything. Kindness, empathy, that sense that I have a stake in your success, that I'm going to make sure that just because my daughters are doing well, that's not enough. I want your kids to do well also. Empathetic kindness is what binds us together and how we've moved forward based on the idea that we have a stake in each other's success." You know, it sounds so beautiful and wonderful, mm-hmm. and it sounds like, well, if that's what he's for, then conservatives must be the politics of cruelty, greed, callousness, and the liberals have never been reluctant to connect those dots and make that obvious.
So when we look at all of this, is it actually the case? I mean, is it provable? And I guess we have to ask the question, you know, who gets to define what good intentions are?
Right. Well, and I think the biggest sort of debate between the two different political views is conservatives and libertarians ask the question, if you have good intentions, mm-hmm. but you don't actually make society better, is that okay? Is that enough? Is it okay for you to try and fail because you've put in place laws and rules that have all the wrong incentives and actually make us less rich, less empowered as a society? Is that okay? And liberals say no. Good intentions are not enough. One of my favorite libertarian books is called Beyond Good Intentions. Mm-hmm. It's written by Doug Bandow of the Cato Institute. And it just raises the fact, are good intentions enough? And the answer is no. So conservatives say what's really important is good incentives. And so disciplining government, you know, ought to be common ground between liberals and conservatives. Liberals think that waste and abuse is the exception. But incentives are the rule, not the exception. They're the thing that are going to drive all of the forces behind every rule that we have. And so I was reviewing a list of all of the accomplishments of the Obama administration. And, you know, of course, number one on the accomplishment is the Affordable Care Act. That was the worst legislation in 75 years. Costs have skyrocketed for most Americans. You know, it's cost hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. Millionaires can now qualify for a full subsidy. And to top it all off, the measures that caused them to put it in place, the death rate have actually increased.
So we don't hear about that.
No, it's all the wrong incentives, and it didn't work, and it cost way too much money. And now that we're going to hopefully repeal it, everyone is saying, oh, no, we can't do that because that would not be compassionate.
Yeah, that's Tim Kaine. Make America sick again, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
We're going to continue this with David Murad on the other side. Ellie, see if our caller can hold through the line there because we'd like to get him on the other side of the news and weather as the Shilling Show continues. 977-1070. Stay with us. Hey, the Shilling Show continues. It is a Tuesday edition of the program, and we're so glad that you're here with us weekdays from noon to 2. I want you to make an appointment with the Shilling Show here on News Radio 1070, 98.9 FM, WINA. The phone number is 434-977-1070. We're talking about the politics of kindness, quote-unquote, and we have to define what that means. David Murad is our guest, online at muradonmoney.com. And Greg is on the line. Greg, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata. Go right ahead.
Well, hello, David. Hey, hello, Rob.
Hey, Greg.
Very quickly, you know, you give a man a fish, and he could eat today, but if you teach a man a fish, he can eat tomorrow and the next day. But what the left has done is they've created a bureaucracy and a mantra whereby the individual is not allowed to work out his God-given talents of hunting and gathering. And when I say hunting and gathering and building shelter and finding water, that means you could go to school and get a profession that would fulfill that. So it expands into modern day. And when you just give people things, it creates huge psychological problems of self-worth. And so the left really is doing an absolute disservice to the masses by giving them things. We as people, when we first started out, were given these gifts by God, and sometimes we failed, and sometimes we actually failed and died if we couldn't find a fish to eat, and that's part of the balance of nature, and I think that the fact that what they're doing now is destroying that, and that's why you have drug addiction, psychological problems, and all kind of chaos, and I'll just sign off and listen.
Greg, thank you very much. That leaves the line open at 977-1070. David?
Yeah, it is true that in a government handout society, it produces terrible things in people's psyche. First of all, it produces a sense of shame and a lack of self-worth. And second, it destroys gratitude because it becomes an entitlement. And those are all very, very healthy things for good mental health. And the government actually ends up hurting that. The government cannot be compassionate. The government is only a set of rules. And I think that's something that liberals don't see and conservatives do see. So government has no intentions or compassions toward us, only rules and bureaucracy. You can't pass a law that the people in government should empathize and care more, and the people in government who are going to be running through these rules are going to be following the rules. You know, it's a shame that liberals don't care more about the incentives of those rules, because that's really what's important, because they're not caring about people. If you were to care about people and give freely from your resources, that's called private charity. That's not called government in a government program and a government entitlement. And I think that's the biggest thing that ends up destroying both our society moral fabric, if you will. And conservatives care about that. They care about those kinds of morals.
You know, when Greg was talking about all of this and what this mentality does to people, I thought of spoiled children. And I think everybody universally can look and say, hey, if you just give your kids everything, they're going to turn into spoiled, rotten brats. And I think we can take that and extrapolate that lesson and put it upon people who are older and say, you know what, you're going to have a lot of problems if you start giving adults things instead of making them earn them. You mentioned the undermining of self-worth and also this entitlement mentality, which leads to covetousness and all other sorts of things. It's really destructive. I don't know why we see it in kids, but we can't see it in adults.
Yeah, liberals think that capitalism produces selfishness and that somehow liberalism produces selflessness. And it's just not true. The exact opposite is true. Even Adam Smith in the Wealth of Nations talked about when you go into the store and people provide you with bread and services and all of that, they're actually not doing it because they're altruistic. They're doing it because they are acting in their own self-interest. but that acting in their own self-interest provides a huge wealth of different services for you to take advantage of. Whereas the handouts do, they produce a selfishness where people are not asking, you know, what can I do for my country? But they're asking, you know, what can the government hand out to me? And liberals are constantly harping on this. They're constantly saying, well, people are voting against their self-interest because they think that their self-interest would be is just they, if they just voted for all the government handouts that they could get. Well, that's a very self-centered view of citizenship, mm-hmm. that you should always vote in whatever does the best for you personally. And conservatives and libertarians say that's a terrible way to run a country. That's a terrible way to set up rules and incentives. You're going to incentivize selfishness tremendously through government coercion rather than just through private effort.
But we know, and we can see, because we've been raised this way or we've self-taught, that life is beyond the next hour. It's beyond the next meal. It's beyond the next day. It's beyond the next election. That even if we were to vote ourselves, everybody, a minimum wage of $500 an hour, that at some point, and it probably would be sooner rather than later, but at some point, the whole thing would come crashing down. So just because it feels good right now or it makes us happy right now doesn't make it a good idea.
And what has to change for in order for that view to be more prevalent is more discussions like this on the radio. It really is true that many, many avid proponents of conservative libertarian capitalism started out as Marxist, mm-hmm. Because Marxists are at least thinking about things and they're trying to figure things out. And then they listen to a radio show or they read, you know, the Road to Serfdom or something like that. And those books and those discussions over a period of time will change the hearts and minds. Because for most people, this politics of kindness is little more than social virtue signaling on social media. They're not actually committed to it in any way. They just like the right things and share the right videos on social media, and they think that makes them okay because now they're in the in crowd that's sharing all of this. Another way of saying it is that liberals care about helping much less than they care about caring.
Mm.
And so if you look at most liberals, they actually don't do very much in order to – they're not employing people. They're not producing a goods and service that other people would have to pay more money for if they did it themselves. They're not doing any of the things. And I would say that probably the height of liberals reducing global poverty is when they buy an iPod that was manufactured overseas. Mm. They're actually doing more when they buy some material that was, you know, that was shirt or clothing that was manufactured in India or Bombay or the Philippines. They're actually doing more to alleviate global suffering and global poverty than all of the social signaling that you see on Facebook and all of the social shaming that they do for conservatives and libertarians.
You know, David, and we're talking with David Morata, there was a video that you sent me to take a look at from Prager University. And one of the things in there that was so profound was, you know, the liberals want all this money to do things. But the way that you get the money to do these things is to let people be productive and earn it. The money doesn't earn itself.
Yeah. And that's really the essence of if you put the incentives in the right place for society to produce more and produce more goods, that will help everyone more than any kind of just taking away from people and redistributing of wealth.
977-1070 is the phone number. We have a line open for you, and Chris is on the phone. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Rob. Happy New Year, David.
Thank you.
I ended up getting the idea that Americans, all of us have our own personal throne that we sit on, and that we solidify that place on our own throne, our individual throne, by, I guess, growing. And when I struggle with something that I don't understand, but I don't give up and I continue to go at it until I understand it, I feel better about who I am and my standing in the world and my standing in my society and my community. And I feel good about who I am. And when this happened back in Jamestown, everybody was doing the socialist thing in Jamestown until Captain John Smith came up and said, if you don't work, you don't eat. And everybody started doing their part. They first tried to do it where only a few people did the work and everybody got a hold of that, they started starving because not everybody was willing to work. And I think it's very important that we look at what the liberals are doing now. They're getting very, very upset because our ideology has taken over the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. And I think all these protests are because these people realize that when you have that much standing in society, you affect influence on people, and they don't want anybody's influence to gain over theirs. And I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, Chris, thanks very much. David?
Yeah, Chris has got a very interesting point about Jamestown, and I know that story has made it around the internet. What's interesting is the quote from John Smith, "If you don't work, you don't eat." Is actually, for many people will find this surprising, it's actually from the Apostle Paul in the Bible.
That's right. It's a biblical quote.
So it's you know, people talk about, you know, having biblical compassion and things like that, but it's what is in the best interest of the person. And sometimes what's in the best interest of the person is a little bit of hunger to make them rise to the occasion and be what they can be. The book When Helping Hurts talks about never doing for someone what they can do for themselves. Because that actually weakens the spirit. It weakens the society's, you know, sort of motivation. It weakens the self-interest. The liberal argument is, in essence, this is what decent people want, but people want all kinds of things that are not best encouraged by passing laws. Mm-hmm. You know, I want people to save and invest 15% of their take-home pay. That's a good financial planning principle. But we tried doing that. It's called Social Security, and it robs us all from being millionaires because the government takes it, and when the government chews it up, it could have provided every single person contributing to Social Security, it could have provided them with $1 million at retirement at least. And instead of privatizing it, we run it through the government, and $1 million for every single individual is wasted. And you look at the example of Chile, where they've privatized Social Security, and it works better. There's on any measure you want to measure it by, Chileans pay less and retire with more than Americans do when you compare it to the incomes of the Chileans. You know, but somehow, if it's privatized and it's Chileans' own money being saved and invested, it's not compassionate. It's not kind. It's just people's own money. But all of the incentives are in the right place. And if Obamacare is the worst legislation in the past 75 years, Social Security is the worst legislation from 75 years ago. it's another example of trying to be kind and yet impoverishing generations and generations of people. So I think that's the principle: is we actually want things to work and to do well for society. We don't just want random acts of kindness. We want structured rules that produce goodness and produce wealth, and produce all the things that we want for a society.
Well said. We're talking with David Morata. We have one segment left, 434-977-1070. When we come back, David had put together a list, and we start out of Obama accomplishments, and we'll put that in quotes. But I want to talk about some of the other ones here. We'll take a little trip down memory lane when the Shilling Show continues in just a moment. Final segment of the Shilling Show for this hour with David Morata, president of Morata Wealth Management. And we welcome you here, 434-977-1070. Ellie stands by to take your calls, comments, questions, challenges. They're all welcome here, 977-1070. You can also send me an email, robs@wina.com. That's robs@wina.com. We're talking about the politics of kindness. And there was a list of these so-called accomplishments of Barack Obama and his administration, and they're nothing of the sort. We talked earlier about Obamacare, and I was thinking of all the people that have been on this program have been hurt by that. Small business owners here locally have been approached by a number of people who said this has been devastating for us, and many individuals who never get to use insurance anymore because not only are the premiums so high, but the deductibles have gone through the roof too.
Yeah, and every restaurant worker made sure that all their staff worked less than 30 hours a week. So suddenly restaurant workers had to find two jobs just to be able to make ends meet. Yeah, the harm from Obamacare has been tremendous. And it's amazing to me that as we're looking at hopefully repealing it in the new year, you know, that liberals are talking about how terrible this is and how mean this is, and that they have no willingness to concede that all the incentives that were put in place by Obamacare were mean and mean-spirited because they had good intentions. And so, you know, the question of what's mean and what's kind is in what happens to people, I think, not in what your intentions are. And you at least need to concede, you know, I was good intentioned, but I was stupid. But they're not even willing to concede that. They're willing to say, I'm good intentioned, and that's all that matters. And that's really the fatal conceit, if you will, for liberalism.
Let's take a walk down memory lane in our remaining few minutes here. The stimulus bill, boy, that was a good investment and helped a lot of people, right?
Yeah, it wasted $787 billion with no accounting for where it went. The U.S. corruption perception measure increased. It helped drop us out of the free category of economic freedom. Down to the top of the mostly free, with no real or lasting effect for our $787 billion added to the deficit.
Poof, it was gone. This one's interesting because I remember the arguments that were going on at the time regarding lengthening unemployment benefits.
Yeah, they lengthened them. They ended up lasting, I think, over a year, and it lengthened the job recovery. It kept unemployment relatively high. It kept participation in the rate relatively low. I knew people who used that because they wanted to be a stay-home mom, and they just decided to do that instead.
Hey, why not?
And lengthen their benefits. I know one man who started a business and put all the income under his wife so that he could keep collecting unemployment benefits, but now this was opportunity to start a business. Just a lot of wasted money in that that would have been better. It made it difficult to hire for businesses because you had to compete with free unemployment, and I didn't have to do anything. So it made it difficult in really every regard. And I think because it made it difficult to hire, it actually helped accelerate the moving of jobs overseas where people were hungry and did want to work. It helped increase the automation because it justified more automation. And it helped increase reducing a workforce in America permanently.
This one is one of my all-time favorites for worst laws ever. Cash for clunkers.
Yeah,
it made me sick.
They paid to destroy perfectly good cars. That was actually hurt everyone because you ended up, you just ended up destroying a perfectly good car for no reason whatsoever. And I know all the arguments that liberals will make on that, but that was the most stupid program, I think, of the Obama administration. Not the most harmful, but certainly one of the most stupid ones.
Yeah, that was just incredibly dumb. We had the bailouts to GM and Chrysler. Ford didn't take the money, and Ford survived. GM lost several brands. Yeah, I've often thought about this, and I'm going to go down a slight trail here. But, you know, GM had so much value built up in a brand like Pontiac, which is now gone. They obviously spent a lot of money promoting Saturn, a new brand that they launched in the 80s or 90s. And these things just went away. They're just gone.
Yeah, and the Obama administration touted it as a success because they took over the ownership of GM, and then they gave it to the unions along with a big pile of money, and then the unions gave them the pile of money back. But what they did is they took GM away from bondholders. Mm-hmm. Granted, it was going into bankruptcy, so shareholders might not have had any rights. But bondholders had all of the rights. They took it away from the bondholders, and they gave it to the unions. Just be clear, gave it to the unions with a big pile of money, and the unions turned around and gave the pile of money back. But the unions kept ownership of GM. And I think that's the fatal conceit that people say. They say it didn't cost the government anything. No, because they stole it from the bondholders and they gave it to the unions, which was a completely illegal act for the government to do, and yet it flew and was okay.
What could have happened instead? What would have been the appropriate way to handle the crisis that we were facing regarding the automakers?
You know, the very first article that I wrote, I co-authored with my father. It was back a long time ago, 2002, and it was called "Will the United States Go the Way of Japan?" And our thesis was no. If you remember, Enron had just happened then. And our thesis was no because the Japanese impoverished their entire society because when a company is in danger of going bankrupt, they subsidize it for years and years and years, and it costs them a tremendous amount of money. But when a company goes bankrupt in the United States, we call that creative destruction. It's okay for a company to go bankrupt because if banks do things they shouldn't have done and they go bankrupt, then the banks that didn't do things that they shouldn't have done will be left over and society will be better. But when you bail the banks out that did things they shouldn't have done, and you bail the car companies out that weren't able to figure out how to run their business as well, the other things in the United States will compete with them that were doing things right. So what would have happened is maybe GM would have reorganized, and maybe they would have been able to come out of it. A lot of companies that go bankrupt are able to come out of it. They go into receivership, and then they come out of it. And the bondholders would have maintained their control, so that capital would have been preserved. But the unions would not have just been given the business because they could be given the business. There would have been, we've got a process in the United States for who gets receivership and who is able then to take a company out of bankruptcy. And that would have been good for the economy and for the economic health of companies in America.
And I remember all of these dealerships having to be shut down. They were forced, they wanted to stay open. They were forced to close. It was just an incredible and horrible time. All right, David, we look to better things ahead, I hope. But this has been a good review, a walk down memory lane of things that we hopefully will not encounter again.
Yeah, hopefully some liberals will realize that the politics of kindness actually belongs to the conservatives and libertarians, and that their intentions are just as good as the liberals.
David Morata is online at MoratoOnMoney.com. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.